Kick-Ass Vets, sharing tips to help empower you to take control of your career. Hi, everybody. Thanks for joining us. Today, we are very lucky to have Dr. Haley with us to share her experiences about internship and, you know, trying to decide which path to choose in the veterinary world. I was very lucky to work with Haley at a couple different clinics. Our paths crossed a couple times, and now she's gone over to the UK, and we miss her. But anyways, welcome, Dr. Haley. And if you want to tell us a bit about yourself and your veterinary background and history, we can start there.
Thank you so much, Anne. It's been so wonderful to have you in my life, and I'm sorry that I'm across the ditch, but, you know, these things happen. We'll be back in Oz for sure soon enough. So I guess I had a bit of a convoluted path into the vet world. I started off as a research scientist and eventually found, you know, after working in a few different fields, including you know, virology and human cancer research, which were all very interesting, that perhaps I just wasn't really suited to the lab rat lifestyle. And so, you know, being not quite old and still stupid enough, I went back to uni and did my vet degree initially through University of Edinburgh and then finished it off at Sydney, of course, because nothing's that simple. After that, I guess, you know, we all come to the point of deciding, are we going to subject ourselves to an internship and potentially think about specializing down the track, or, you know, are we going to go straight into GP? And I think both of those points are equally valid. You know, I've had friends that have gone into mixed practices and they've come out with these wonderful, incredible skills. They're very confident in their vet knowledge and, you know, practical aspects. Of course, in each of those, you do have to communicate with clients, and that's something that you'll just learn regardless of which path you take. I think the internship for me, I decided to go down that route, so straight out of uni, was something that I thought, if I left it too long, I probably wouldn't do it at all. So I should do it now, you know, cement some of those skills, gain a bit more information, you know, surrounded by people that had gone down a specialist path. And so hopefully it would be, you know, best practice, which is something I'm quite passionate about. And it was, of course, incredibly hard. I think we all, anyone who's done an internship will realize that, yeah, it's a lot of work and no sleep, and you know, it was rotating like most are. During that process, you have some time in an emergency situation or an emergency night shift kind of role, which I think was something that I benefited from most, in that it gives you, I guess, the confidence in your own knowledge and skills. Something that, you know, you definitely need down the track, regardless of where you go. General practice, of course. If you go into emergency, I'm sure Anne will tell you 100%. Because there, no one's coming to save you. It's just you. And, yeah, I got to see some really cool stuff. So, obviously, some, you know, crazy advanced surgeries that you wouldn't even attempt in a general practice situation. But, yeah, it's a hard decision. I definitely had the opportunity to have a lot of time to think about whether or not I wanted to go down that track further, because obviously after the internship, then you have residencies, and there's certainly no walk in the park either. And so for me, yeah, it was, you know, it was a hard time. I made some wonderful friends, and I think, you know, it's probably similar to going into war with fellow soldiers. You know, you feel like you've really got to band together to get through this, and it's only a year, but it can feel like a lifetime. So I did mine in a general practice, and I think in that situation it's very high throughput. You're exposed to a lot of cases, and you're expected to really pick up the slack. Where the specialists and other clinicians aren't able to carry it through. So I think you get a lot more sort of hands-on practical experience. And I would recommend in some ways, if you're keen, then maybe look at small practices that are not maybe attached to a university, because you do get a lot of exposure. But at the same time, I think universities offer such a wonderful opportunity, I guess, to sit back and, you know, maybe think about that case that you just dealt with rather than having to rush on to the next one. And you get to attend rounds. I think you get sort of a bit more time to really let things sink in, understand, and kind of comprehend from a perspective of both the practical aspect that you've just seen and the papers and literature that have recently been released. So it depends on who you are, I guess, but I think that that's very beneficial, and I would consider that if I was someone who was going down that path. And I think I'm taking up some of the questions that you would already ask me, Anne.
So yeah, I'm just gonna, no, it's great.
Jump on through. You can edit that in.
No, I think it's great, like, just knowing the difference between a private practice versus a university and making that decision if you want to do an internship. That's great information for people trying to decide. So yeah, just keep going.
You can edit questions.
No, it's
making
fine.
Your missing life out. I'm sorry.
No, it's great. And then you went to do a specialty internship, correct?
Yeah. So then I did think at a certain point that maybe, given my background in human cancer research, that oncology would be a good fit for me. So, you know, maybe not the best idea to go from one very intense internship into the next, but I did that. And I think at that point I had more, because it's hard to know how is that life going to fit you. I think I realized that, you know, ethically it's quite hard to justify in some cases the procedures that are being done in humans, for me at least, on a regular basis, because, you know, we know that it's going to be hard. We know that there's going to be, you know, it's a tough road, but the outcome is maybe some extra years, and these years are not necessarily just, you know, one or two, but they could be decades of people's lives. In animals, it seemed as though in some cases we were pushing these procedures that were not necessarily justified in my mind. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of that, you know, came down to communication with the owners, of course, and trying to get them to understand that these are options, but are they options that we should take? I did sort of struggle, yeah, quite a bit ethically during that time, and then decided, you know, ultimately it's not something that I think I could commit my life to. I can't sit there in somebody. I'm really keen for them to submit their animal to certain treatments that are not necessarily going to prolong their life, going to be very costly, and the animal may suffer unnecessarily during that period.
Yeah.
That's not to say, of course, that there are wonderful chemotherapy, you know, and radiotherapy procedures out there, mm-hmm. and all can have to be, you know, approached quite differently. You know, lymphoma, for example, you can just see some wonderful immediate, you know, life-changing impacts of this medication for these dogs and cats. And so, you know, it's really whatever fits you. It didn't really fit me.
Yeah. It's a very emotive, like, very personal arena to play in. And it's hard because then you're going to have owners, like, I know, not even working the oncology department, the oncology owners that are being recommended, no, you shouldn't do this. And they're saying yes, 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 yes. And, like, who are you then as the vet to say, no, this isn't worth it? It's a very challenging emotional arena, in my opinion. I wouldn't thrive there at all.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. It's the owners that, I mean, this has been your friend for however many years. You don't want to let them down, but at the same time, you're also holding on to that, you know, that relationship. You're not ready to let go. Why should you? And I saw too many cases just taken too far. It made it quite... Mm.
Did any of the oncologists that you were working for have strategies that they would use to try to cope with that? Or, like, what was their approach? Because obviously this isn't an isolated thing, and you, like, the oncologists are lovely, wonderful people. Like, what did they do? How did they just mentally disconnect? Like, what did you find they did to cope with that?
Yeah. I mean, I think in some cases it's hard not to be affected.
Yeah.
But yeah, I saw a number of different ways to handle it. Wonderful oncologists, coming at it from different backgrounds. And I think, sometimes I think coming from like a European background versus an American background, where maybe these kind of techniques or the treatments are offered and occur, you know, even to the nth degree, maybe more so in an American context.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, in certain cases it was kind of a given that, yes, you know, of course you'll want to just do every particular procedure that we, you know, everything that's on offer,
regardless
of maybe how your pet's going. And other times I did see a lot of really directed counseling that these oncologists would like sit down and say, you know, this is where we're at, you know, as much as we can do, maybe it's not worth doing. And I really, you know, I appreciated that they'd taken the time to step back and say, honestly, you know, I wouldn't recommend this, even though it makes the clinic so much money, you know, it would be blah, blah, blah. Vet is a business. So it's kind of disconnecting from that. I had a lot of respect for, you know, for their approach.
Yeah, because oncologists get a lot of slack in the vet world too, where GPs or people say, oh, they're, you know, taking advantage of people that are emotional and that sort of stuff, and working in those centers, I know that it's the owners that are driving that, but so many vets, I think, will criticize and condemn oncologists for providing those services that they ethically don't feel should be provided. It's just such a weird world, and it's good to know firsthand that the oncologists are having those conversations. And I know they are, from working in the emergency center associated with them, that I see them come in later and be like, okay, this has to happen. And then the people like are like, no, we have to do everything. I'm like, oh, okay, this is what the oncologists are dealing with.
Yeah, the extreme dedication, I guess, is one way of putting
it. Yeah.
You know, to the detriment, unfortunately, of the pet. It's hard to watch, but yeah, you saw it firsthand, I guess, in like a very, like, severe, you know, the scenario where things have decompensated to the point where they're really dead.
Yeah. It was, I always felt bad when I was the one that would end up being the final vet of that patient's life, and like sending an email being like, I'm sorry, this patient came in. But yeah, it's hard. So what, I guess, previous to that, you said you went into it because of your virology and human cancer component. Did you not expect that to be the situation when you went in? Like, what were your expectations of the oncology residency that were then so different from the reality? Or did you have those expectations, just thought you would feel differently? Like, how did that emotionally go?
That's a good question. I guess I didn't sort of approach that career thinking it's going to be so heavily based on money still, which I guess it kind of always is, unfortunately. And I thought that you would see kind of more immediate, you know, benefits to these patients' lives. Mm-hmm. And many cases, unfortunately, you know, we counsel the owners to know that this is not going to be a treatment to make them better or to cure them. There is no cure in this animal oncology life. Mm-hmm. It's really to, you know, potentially improve quality of life if we can, or extend their life, hopefully both. But, you know, it was a lot of, you know, seeing the kind of slow demise of these pets that you you know, you would hope that their life would be better. And yeah, the clients that do come and spend thousands of dollars on chemotherapy and radiotherapy, they're not your average client. And so I guess you're dealing with these extreme kind of individuals mostly. And I think we're used to dealing with a lot of interesting people in vet, but
oncology yeah, gets the most interesting.
Yeah, it really did bring out this, you know, completely different kind of slice of society for me.
Yeah,
so it was hard. And I think, you know, on top of that, if your work environment is not very nice, then that does make you kind of question, you know, willing to go down the track, is this really for me?
Yeah. What
was it?
Did you feel like a lot of us, because we're so type A, starting that internship and not completing it and having that check, did you have any, like, was that hard, even though, you know, right decision makes sense on logically, did you have an emotional difficulty kind of leaving that box unchecked, or were you okay walking away because you knew it was the right decision?
Oh, no, 100%. I mean, I've second guessed, I think, probably every decision I've made in my life being type A. Yeah, no, like lots of, I'm not going to say regret. I guess, yeah, it was a hard one for me. Just I don't like to leave anything unfinished as a rule anyway. You know, I think if any of us get through vet school, then we realize that, you know, that's not easy, but you get through it, and it's a, you know, positive thing. And so, yeah, walking away from an internship or a specialist internship or even a resident, if you do that, it's never easy. And I think I beat myself up a lot over it. And you kind of feel like, you know, it's a failure on your part. Maybe you're not good enough. Maybe you're not good enough for the industry. You know, there's lots of...
Or maybe you're just smart enough to recognize that it wasn't for you and you moved on to something better.
Look, I think eventually I've come around to that. It's like it was the right decision. And if I'd have stayed, who knows, maybe I would have just completed it. Maybe I would have gone insane. Maybe, you know, maybe, who knows. But, you know, we make the best decisions with the information we have at the time. And I think that's all I can kind of go back.
Well, I think there's no, like, I don't know, my random opinion that I force down everyone's throats. I don't think that if you could tell that path, career path wasn't for you, then... You got the information that you wanted out of that.
Yeah, you're right.
Like so the point of an in.
Yeah, you're right.
Like the point of an internship is to gain information and knowledge and improve yourself in a direction. And you got the information and the knowledge of this isn't right for me. And this is what these cases look like. And it's, I think a lot of people do go down the road of internships and residencies. It's like when you're in a bad relationship, but you've been in it for so long, you don't want to walk away because you don't know and you've invested that time in it, right? And it's the same thing. I think it takes a lot of guts and a lot of courage to say, no, this isn't right for me, and I'm going to walk away and do what I need. So I think it's incredibly amazing that, like, I think you're inspirational for saying, nope, this isn't what I want. This isn't what I like. I'm going to go find what I want and doing that. And the reason I ask the question is because I think a lot of people in your circumstance, even though they know 100% this isn't what I want to do, have those feelings of, oh, I have to complete it because that's what you do. You complete things. I'm type A. I must succeed in everything that I do. And it's reevaluating what your definition of success is, I think, is kind of something to think about.
No, I mean, you're so right. I think, it's definitely one of the hardest decisions I've had to make. You know, leaving something that you've worked, you feel that you've worked quite hard to get initially. But I think there is something quite freeing about, you know, sitting back and thinking to yourself, is this really what I want to do? Mm. You know, am I going to just sort of let myself drift down this path that's not going to satisfy me? Or am I going to find something that I'm truly passionate about?
So what did you do next after that path?
Then I guess I decided just to go back and take some time to myself. I did. I worked in, you know, one or two GPs on a kind of, I think they were just maternity leave fill-in positions. And then, you know, once I felt that I'd gained some of the skills in GP life, because once you've spent 2 years in specialist clinics, you don't really get the exposure to the things that are really, you know, quite hands-on and basic, but like every day for you. So, you know, you don't see ears, you don't see skin stuff, you don't do any basic cast rates or spays or anything like that. And yeah, it was a little bit scary actually just going back into GP, because I felt like I should know this stuff. And yet it was...
I did a spay for the first time in a couple years, because I was working overnight and it was a quiet night and the clinic was really busy the next day. And I was like, oh, they have this spay that was admitted. I can do it overnight and take something off the table for them the next day. I'm going to be so nice. It's a cat spay. I was sweating, literally sweating. I was so nervous doing this. Like, give me a pyometra that's ruptured, GDV, foreign body, linear foreign body, RNA, like, no problem. This cat spay, like, I was like heart pounding, sweating under my gown, and like I like gowned up and everything, because I'm like, that's what you do, right? And it's you don't do these kind of routine things, and when you get out of it, it's GP is, yep. GP is hard. Like, working GP is very difficult, and you need to have so much knowledge. And people always say, like, oh, Emerge, how do you do that? I'm like, man, guys, like, I do the easy job. I stabilize it. There's only so many things that can go wrong emergently. And then I hand it back to you to deal with long term.
Like, honestly, I mean, emergency is absolutely a wonderful skill. Do not talk that down. But the GP life, yeah, it's so hard. And there's so many factors. And, I guess it was a bit, you know, a bit of a learning curve once again. You know, you think that you've come out, you've been in practice for a while, you got this. But, you know, each new thing is another fairly steep learning curve again. But thankfully, yeah, it was nice. I had some pretty nice little supportive clinics that I fell into, quite busy, definitely like high throughput once again. Mm-hmm. And so kind of hit the ground running and managed to feel a little bit more confident, or confident enough to then start doing some locum stuff. And I think that's when I realized that, it's kind of nice. You've got some flexibility. You can, you can choose your hours mostly. You can choose your rates in many cases.
Yeah.
And I met some wonderful people like yourself. And, it was a good break, I think. It wasn't something that I found, you know, I wanted to do long term, because I still had this niggling, you know, need in the back of my mind to do things like, you know, to do something that incorporated a little bit of my previous research life, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, I am a bit of a crazy person, obviously.
As we all are.
Yeah. I sometimes wonder, you know, maybe I should have just stuck at it. and it kind of led me to do some locum stuff at the university, at Sydney Uni, at their teaching hospital, and then that became more of a part-time, full-time, part-time role, depending on who was off, where I had more interaction with students again, and that was quite nice.
Mm-hmm.
So getting to have running rounds for them and sitting back and discussing cases and all of that was, you know, quite nice, very fulfilling, and a very much more relaxed environment than being in a, you know, one of these general practices or a mm-hmm. specialist center that's not affiliated with teaching.
So
I guess that kind of got me thinking again, where do I want to be? I think having that internship, you know, kind of done and dusted, it makes you think maybe you can consider a residency. The question is, what in? I kind of got involved with Taronga Zoo with their pathology unit, just doing some volunteer stuff on the side, which was really nice.
How did you get into that?
I guess I contacted them, and I think it was more. So I had some great lecturers which stayed in touch with me. One of them was an anatomic pathologist, and he kind of just, you know, was like, ah, you know, what are you going to do with yourself? And maybe you should consider pathology.
Yeah.
He came to visit me actually during my internship, which was really random, but quite nice. He had his young family with him. And
yeah.
So I think just kind of staying in touch with these people, and then I was trying to keep my options open at that point, but kind of said, well, why don't you try and just get like a little bit of experience, or, you know, understand what it's like on the ground floor,
mm-hmm.
which is good. And I would, you know, I would certainly recommend, you know, potentially if I'd been able to spend more time in an oncology unit, maybe I would have known before I went down the path of internship.
Yeah.
But hey, whatever. So I spent some time just volunteering like once a week if I could at the zoo with the pathology unit. And they were incredibly lovely, very embracing, let me kind of do as much or as little as I felt happy to do.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, being at a zoo is very cool anyway. So yeah. I was just happy to, you know, wander through and then, like, admire the fabulous, you know, views that they have of the Harbour Bridge and blah, blah. But, yeah, I got a lot of exposure to what it's like, I guess, in that context.
Mm-hmm.
Wildlife things don't often get a lot of funding, unfortunately. So, you know, it's whether or not you kind of value the, or you need to value a reliable income down the track. Unfortunately, we all have to consider that.
Yeah.
So I kind of thought about, you know, yes, if I did a residency in pathology, then it does open some doors for me. That might provide, you know, income, but also a bit of interesting stuff on the side.
Yeah.
There's a lot of opportunity for research and even just getting involved in very small trials of, you know, say new adapting human research techniques to the animal world and things like that. So
mm-hmm.
I think that's the initial appeal. Going down the track of applying for residencies, yeah, I think that's when you kind of have to commit. And so, eventually I interviewed for a couple. There wasn't, unfortunately, a lot in Australia at the time. And so I've ended up in the UK.
Was it like a match for the residencies?
Like I did think about down the US match route. It's only the US that does that, or US and Canada. So with the new Trump arrival came basically a shutting down of of who wasn't American or resident being offered the position. So
yeah.
I'd kind of at that point, if you are considering going to the States, they really like you to go and visit them in person, spend a couple of weeks or at least a couple of days with the clinic, getting to know, you know, the people, the residents and whoever your supervisors would be. So I'd kind of gotten to the point of, you know, booking in flights to organise to go visit some of these universities to see their programs. And then realised after discussing with them that it's very unlikely that they would be able to choose anyone who wasn't American, basically.
That's so unfortunate.
Yeah, it was a bit rough. But, you know, ultimately, I guess I went, I looked at the European side of things, and there were a few programs. Once again, a lot of them do like you to be resident in the country.
Yeah.
Prior to being accepted. And so that means 4 years in the UK,
yeah,
which is quite mad.
That's a big commitment, yeah.
So even though I'm a dual citizen in the UK, I would still have to be living here for 4 years to be accepted in some of the universities.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, it was kind of slim pickings, unfortunately. I did end up discussing with a private company who were originally a European-based clinical pathology lab and then expanded to the UK after they'd kind of acquired a few different little small practices or trees, and had a really good residency program that was American-based, so you still get to sit American boards, which is important because I think, you know, being able to practice worldwide is important to me. I'm a bit of a nomad, and I know you are too. So, yeah, it kind of seemed like an opportunity that was too good to turn down.
Yeah.
I was very surprised put it to me, really. So,
yeah.
It was.
That's awesome. So, you knew you wanted to specialize, but then pathology, you kind of had to. It's funny because some people specialize because they're like, I want to be this. I want to be a surgeon. I want to be a medicine specialist. And that's why they specialize, because they want to do that specific thing. And then you have this other camp of people that specialize because they want to specialize in something. They just want to be at the forefront of that career, but they don't know what. I love how there's these two camps of people. So you were like, I just want to specialize. I know I want to be in that world, but I don't know what to pick.
It's quite weird. I feel like maybe I was a bit schizophrenic initially. Like, I love surgery. You know, I did, at least. I don't think that I could find myself dedicated to surgery, having been through that, like, internship process and seeing that, you know, unfortunately, your life is purely, you know, 100% you're in the clinic, you know, and when you're not, you're getting called back in.
Yeah.
Even these people have done this for years and years and years. Anyway, I found that a bit disheartening. I think my goals were personally to have some control over my work-life balance, which I think I can't achieve with many specialties, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's true.
And yeah, you know, pathology, maybe I tried to reason it out, but it makes sense to me at the time.
No, I think it's great. And it's so interesting, too. You get these little puzzles and then you have to figure it out. Like, I think pathology is really neat. In school, my profs always told me that I should be a pathologist. My problem is I can't look through a microscope, like, for more than 3 seconds. I just get a migraine. Otherwise, I'd probably do it. Because it's really neat, and you get the history, and you get the blood work, and you get the whole story, and then you kind of...
It's a great investigative, you know.
It's,
I think,
interesting.
That maybe it's the future for you, though, because they're moving over to basically screen-based. So,
oh, are they?
You know, download the slides, and then you can just consider it, you know.
It's something that I could potentially do if I didn't have to... In school, they would, like, you know, when someone else is driving too and you're all looking through the same thing and they're moving around, I'd be like, woo.
Oh, honestly, it happens to me too, especially if they're driving quite wildly and you're like, seriously.
Yeah.
Throw up.
But it is, it's quite interesting. I'm not good at it, but I like it. So it's fine. So are you happy now that you're in this track to do pathology, and do you feel like it's satisfying that need that you have?
Yeah, look, I think obviously it's early days, and we were having a brief chat about how the pandemic has affected my current training schedule. So it's slowed things down a bit. But yeah, look, I think I'm still passionate about, you know, the aspects of clinical pathology. I do really like that sort of hunt aspect where you're given a complicated case and you can potentially get to the bottom of things. You know, it does open up both the kind of, you know, you get some ace control, or you feel like you're operating with a case, but I'm also employing some of those skills from my prior life.
Yeah.
And maybe when I've when I've completed the training, I might feel quite confident to do that. Currently, I, you know, still feel like a real noob. I don't know what I'm doing. but it's pretty, yeah, it's pretty cool. This morning, I attended rounds that one of the residents was presenting, and it was just kind of using a human-adapted PCR assay to try and identify carcinomas or prosthetic carcinomas in dogs, just prosthetic washes, which is pretty cool. So it's less invasive. It's nice. You know, you get more of a confident, you know, diagnosis from something that's pretty minimal for the dog, which is nice.
Yeah. And something that's, like, feasible for vets to do. Like, sometimes I get so frustrated because it's like, oh, well, what do we have to do for that? We have to do a bone marrow biopsy. It's like, how many vets are comfortable doing bone marrow biopsies? And it's like, a prosthetic wash I can do.
And you're right, like, a bone marrow biopsy, the procedure itself is risky and, you know, obviously quite invasive. Mm-hmm. And then I've realized now, being in the lab, that it's even difficult if it's not prepared properly or if it's not done immediately. Then we, you know, potentially it's unreadable and you feel like, oh, God, I've just put that animal through all this stuff, you know, for potentially nothing. But yeah, you're right. So less invasive stuff, I'm 100% for.
And job, in terms of your job dynamic, once you graduate and finish and you're board certified, do you have a lot of flexibility in terms of, like, could you work from home kind of like a radiologist? Like, do you have that potential? Like, is it a lot more flexible to be more of a nomad in that sense?
Yeah, I think that's, like, actually almost 90% appeal to me. but yeah, the flexibility is pretty open at this point. And I think the States was kind of driving that initially.
Yeah.
Companies like IDEX would employ someone from across the world and just sort of send them in, which you can look at on your computer screen and, you know, come up with a report, send that through. Flexible time, you know, you don't have to work the 9 to 5 or whatever else, which is perfect. Yeah. So yeah, ultimately, you know, that would be the main, that would be the main goal. To have some serious flexibility.
Yeah, like it's so great when you work at a place that uses IDEX machines, and if you're not sure, there's just a phone number and you can call and you can talk to a specialist, like, middle of the night, doesn't matter, and, like, they're so amazing. Like, that would be such, that'd be a very cool job to do. That's something that I think would be very neat. And, like, you're, like, saving that person's life. I don't think those specialists realize how wonderful they are to us lowly practitioners when it's, like, you just don't know and you call and they're just like, no, you can do this and you can do this. And it's really, I think, makes a big difference whether they realize or not. So I think that'd be a cool part. That's neat.
That makes me... I do feel like, I mean, I do miss some of the patient contact for sure and the human contact, because it was, you know, I did really like some of the relationships that you can build with your clients and even in, like, an emergency situation where you're seeing them briefly, but you're doing something that you know is life altering to them. You know, it's important that you feel, you know, like you're doing something nice for someone, or you're making a difference. And so, you can still have that interaction. Where I'm based currently, it's kind of right next door to a specialist facility. And so the clinicians will come directly into the lab and discuss cases with you.
Oh, nice.
Which is nice. Pick your brain, you know, bring more slides, bring more samples, whatever, update you on the case, which is great.
Not getting case updates would be hard. I find that that to me is the biggest downside of emergency, is not getting, like, case follow through. And I think that would be hard as a pathologist, because then you'd be like, what happened? Was I right? Did it get better?
I know, that's it. You mean, like, did I say the right thing? Yeah. Oh, good. Yeah, that's it. That's so true.
Yeah. Oh, that's funny. Well, it's good. It's good to know, like, the different aspects of that residency and what you can do and not do and how that process works. So I think that's good information. Do you have any kind of general tips or advice for new grads or other vets considering internships, considering residencies, that kind of stuff, just in general?
Look, I think if you can gather as much information beforehand, yes, you know, sometimes we do have to move states and we haven't been able to visit the facility or countries, you know. Mm-hmm. But just getting, I guess, as much hands-on experience in the field as you can mm-hmm. is really useful. You know, I'm always one to sort of jump into something maybe a little bit too quickly because I'm not afraid of change, but in some instances, maybe you should be a little bit more wary. just sort of have a chat to any of the other residents that have gone through the program or any interns or, you know, if you can set up a face-to-face meeting with them. You know, you can't always know exactly what's going to happen, but I think being willing to put yourself out there and get as much information first is always great. Mm-hmm. And then if it doesn't work out, like you said, being willing to say, meh, you know, this wasn't for me.
Yeah.
And stepping back, yeah, without the guilt that we all put on ourselves.
With other specialties like medicine or surgery or oncology or dermatology, it's kind of like if I'm thinking, oh, I might want to do that, to me there's a clear path. I find one of those people and I go and I shadow. You did the shadowing with the zoo, which was very cool. Do you think it's easier? Like in my mind, shadowing with a pathologist would be very difficult to arrange. Is that wrong?
I think it is quite hard. It's, you know, because ideally I would have also liked to go maybe into one of these places like IDEX or, you know, these companies where you kind of get more of an idea of what it's like in a real life, you know, business kind of scenario.
Yeah.
I think quite nice to be at the zoo, but maybe not as realistic in that they have a lot of flexibility. They're also, you know, kind of tending to a lot of maybe research stuff that you may not get if you're in, you know, purely in a clinical scenario.
Yeah.
And so I did try quite hard to kind of get a foot in the door there just to sort of shadow someone, but it's really hard. You know, they don't have the time to take some random off the street.
Yeah.
They do occasionally take, residents and interns who are already in a program. So, you know, it's fine once you're there. But it can be really difficult to gain that experience. And
so if if someone's considering it and they're in an internship, do you think that they should push really hard while they're in their internship to try to get their institution to try to open that door for them? Do you think that would be easier in terms of even with the universities?
Yeah, if they do allow you to do externships through your internship or like that, then 100%. Jump on that while you can. Even if you're a final year vet student, I think that's a good opportunity to try and get some experience. You know, do a wide variety of things if you have a wide variety of interests, and just try and gain as much experience as you can. But I think it's also the contacts that you get through those things as well that do open for you.
Yeah. Very neat. I'm excited for you. I'm excited to call you in the middle of the night and be like, what's happening with my case?
Feel free. I mean, you can call me now. It'll be very
You'll be like, I'm in Ecuador and yesterday I was ziplining and now I'm working.
That's wonderful. Wouldn't that be good? Yeah. I mean, that's my goal.
I've dreamt, sometimes I think I should be a radiologist so I can work for, the places where I could just go wherever. But, I know. It's so crazy. There's so many opportunities in the vet world. And, you've gone through all of these different paths in a relatively short period of time, which is, it's just so cool. Like the vet profession, there's so many problems with it. There's so much crap that, you know, there's so many downsides, but there's so many amazing upsides. And just I just love the variety that people can choose. And like tomorrow, if I'm like, you know what, I want to be a neurologist, then chances are if I work hard enough, I can do it. You know, it's, I don't want to be a neurologist though.
Nobody does.
Managing long-term seizures. Oh my gosh.
No, thanks. That one didn't factor in my list.
What dose of phenobarb again? One tablet.
No, you're right. So it's, you know, it's an incredible journey, I guess, that we can all take. And the vet degree itself, it seems so single-minded in one way. You know, you enter that, you think, I'm going to come out a vet. Mm-hmm. But actually you have so many opportunities open to you, and you just got to kind of look around, embrace them.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. Good. Is there anything else that you would like to share in general, tidbits, feelings about the vet industry, life, anything before we head off?
Wow. Where to start? Look, I think, I love that you're an advocate for getting people to value themselves more in the vet world. And that is definitely something that we have failed at for many, many years. I think getting, you know, paid appropriately is something that we're always going to be battling with. How to achieve it, you know, I guess it's just everyone having the same, you know, not so much argument, but maybe discussion with their employees. Employers and making it, you know, worth our while, because we should be valued. You know, we've worked hard.
Yeah,
we're smart people. We do a hard job.
And
we deserve to feel, you know, appreciated, and then appreciated monetarily. It's it makes it just a bit sweeter on the other end.
It's funny. I was talking to I was talking to another vet the other day, and I had made a comment, and he said, oh, I wish I was 75% as smart as the specialists. And I was like, but you need to realize, when you're talking about comparing how smart you are or how good you are, we always compare ourselves to the specialists or to this amazing person. But the reality is, our baseline is the general public. If you have your car and your car's going clunkety clunk clunk, and you call the mechanic and you're like, my car's going clunkety clunk clunk, you have no idea what's wrong with your car. It could be the tires, it could be the engine, it could be whatever else is involved in a car that I don't understand, the magic machine that takes me around. But they probably know. They're probably like, oh, it's probably this, this, or this. Does it sound more like a clonky clonk or a clinky clink? And then that will give them information. And it sounds silly, but we do that with like a coughing dog. Well, is it a honking cough? Is it a wet cough? There's so much that we know and take for granted of what we know. And then we think just because it comes to mind easily, that means that it's not valuable. But it's not. Like, you have to think about, what does the average person know, and what do you know? And we know a lot. We really know a lot.
What you do. So you're so right.
It's just, trying to get people to realize how awesome and smart they are, one bit of a time, and collective bargaining power. And if everybody starts standing up for themselves, then the industry will have no choice but to change. And if we start saying to clients, no, you can't tell me I don't care about animals, you can be shown the door if you're going to say crap like that. If everybody starts doing that, clients will learn, oh, okay, I can't be verbally abusive to my vet. So it's so crazy.
So true. Why are we all so self-deprecating? I don't understand.
Yeah.
Is it just part of it? I think it is.
I don't know whether, like, it's just the type of personality that becomes a vet is like this crazy imposter syndrome, or if it's because it's a female dominated profession, or if it's because the public has this perception of vets going in that they're money hungry. So every time we go into a client interaction, we have our backup because we're already defensive from the get go, from this like years of being told something. I don't know what it is, but it's all something that we just have to stop and say, no, like, do you in your heart care about animals? Yes. Then why would you let someone tell you that you don't, and make you feel bad about yourself? Like, you obviously care about their pet. ignore the crazy things that they're saying. If they came up to you and were like, your hair's on fire, and you're like, no, it's not, you'd just be like, my hair's not on fire.
Simple as that.
Yeah. But it's harder than that, but it is as simple as that. Like, it's this combination. So anyways,
it's true.
We'll all do our little parts to try to make the world a better place. World peace.
We try.
All right. Well, I will let you go. Thank you so, so much for joining us. I think you have just amazing amounts of information, and tons of people that are thinking about internships and residencies are going to get a lot of value out of this. So thank you so much. And I hope that everything with the pandemic slows down shortly in the UK and doesn't continue to get worse. Yes. All right. Thanks so much. No worries.
It's been wonderful.